Welcome to Parents' Perspective. How was your morning? 3-year-old Dean's mom asked as she picked him up from nursery school. Great, he answered. I played with Marcy in the playhouse loft. What did you play? His mom inquired. Fireman, he grinned. I practiced jumping with no ladder. Mrs. Parker said my knee might have a big blue bump, too. How can parents know what to expect from a preschool before enrolling our children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today we are lucky to have with us a nursery school teacher with 25 years of experience, Doris Herman. She has recently written a book, Doris Herman's Preschool Primer for Parents. She has raised 3 children and now enjoys her 4 grandchildren, so she can share expertise from both sides of the classroom door. Welcome, Doris.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
How do parents know when a child is ready for preschool?
Well, there are several things to look for. First, parents need to know if they are ready for their child to be in preschool. Some parents have great difficulty separating from their child or may even be reluctant to have their child go to preschool because they're just enjoying this time at home. So there are a lot of factors to consider. One of the factors to look for to know whether or not your child is ready, does your child seem bored at home? Are you constantly looking for play dates for them? Can they be away from you for small periods of time? In other words, are they ready to separate a little bit? If your child seems bored at home and likes to be with other children, it certainly is worth pursuing. There's really no hard and fast rule. There are many factors to consider.
Before a child goes to preschool, would you suggest that they have the experience of playing at another child's house and sort of being left at another child's house for an
absolutely,
hour or two?
Absolutely. It's always good to get used to being with another child and, more importantly, I think, another adult. It's important that they learn to relate to another person because, after all, when they get to school, a teacher is going to be there, and that's another grown-up that they may not know before. So it's good to have all those experiences before they start school.
How would you advise parents to select a preschool?
Oh, that is a very, very big and important issue. Lots of research. If I may refer to the book, there are many checklists in this book. You need to look for location. You need to look for price. The main thing to look for, and people don't really realize this, the most important factor in selecting a preschool is not for the beautiful facility, not for the warm, nurturing teachers, and those are very important, but the most important thing to look for is safety. Is it a safe school?
How do you find that out?
Good question. Good question. You really do need to go and look for yourself. There is a checklist in the book because you have to look for signs that they have met certain standards in the community, in the state, and in the country, especially the playground, the bathrooms, the hand washing, the cleanliness. There are certain standards that schools must uphold, and they will have certificates to attest to that fact.
You can ask to see the certificates?
You must ask to see the certificates. Absolutely. It's critical.
How should parents choose among schools that foster early academic achievement and schools that put more emphasis on social and physical experience?
I'm biased. I come from a play-based school, so in my opinion, and research will bear this out, is that play is the way a child learns about life. So back to your question, certain parents really favor the more academic type schools. They want their children to get ahead, to learn those letters and learn counting and learn the academics. And I think that's fine as long as there is play involved in that particular school situation. And there are certain academic schools, and when a parent researches a school, they need to ask, what is the school's philosophy on academics versus play or academics and play? Hopefully, a school will combine both of those. But the play-based school is one in which the children play. There are learning materials, but the math will come, for instance, at the sand table when they're measuring and they're pouring sand in little containers and bigger containers and bigger. That's math. Nobody's hitting them on the head with, this is bigger, this is smaller, where they might in a more academic school. It just comes naturally. The other thing about play-based schools is children learn to problem solve. by acting out in dramatic play. They are solving life's little problems, sharing, and other things. It's not quite as rote as a more academic setting. Now, having said that, I should say that even the schools who stress academics do have play in them, or at least I hope so, because children do need to play. So, I hope there's a balance between the two. And so it just depends on what the parent's priority is.
My son was in kindergarten, so he had finished preschool, and there were reading groups in kindergarten. And he liked playing with blocks, so the teacher called me in one day to observe a whole day. And when she got finished, she said, "Do you understand why I wanted you to come?" And I said, "Well, not exactly. My son seems very happy." And she said, "Well, but he wants to play with the blocks. He doesn't want to go to his reading group." So I said, "Well, does he have to learn to read now? He's only five." She said, "Well, I mean, you know, we are an academic community and we emphasize this offering even in kindergarten." And I said, "Well, you know, let's just offer it to him. And when he's ready to read, maybe we could let him read. Now you have to understand this was child number three." I don't know if I felt that way with child number one.
You were very secure to speak with the teacher that way. Now, you know, I agree with you. I think that's a wonderful story. It truly is. And it's almost the same thing with computers. I think certain schools now are advertising computer programs for two-year-olds. We have a computer room. We have a computer teacher. You know, the children have the rest of their lives to play with to work with the computer and to be on the computer. Let them play. So if it's important to a parent, by all means. But I think each parent needs to really think about what's important to their child. A three-year-old has only been on this earth 36 months, and so they need to play in those 36 months.
I think there was some study not too long ago that was done that said that children must have a certain amount of physical experience in order to be able to internalize stuff that will later be abstract thought. So even the math and the reading and all that, if they don't get their hands on blocks and sand and other things, the connections that are supposed to be made in the brain won't be made.
You know, absolutely. I think you're so right. It's been my experience that I can really teach any 2 or 3-year-old to read their name, to recognize letters, to do counting. It's so easy to do. So I can see why parents get excited about that. But what is the point? As you said, they're going to learn it later in school. This is the short, wonderful, golden time for play. And I feel very strongly about that.
They're learning. They're learning
they
so much from the play.
In their own way. And they're figuring these things out for themselves. Then the studies have really borne this out, that by the time they all get to kindergarten, they're all learning at the same level. But the children who have been allowed to play and learn by playing have the skills to figure out the problems more than the child who has learned these things by rote. So you can find the preschool you want, but I would really advise really doing research and going to look at those schools. Visiting is an important thing.
Schools that say that they're developmentally based probably would also be play-based, my guess.
Well, that's a word that can be played with, because I think every school would like to think of themselves as developmentally based, and they can kind of bend that word a little bit. I feel very strongly and that every parent go and observe the schools they are considering, whether it's 2 or 3 or 5. Don't listen to your friends. Don't just read the literature. Don't just talk with somebody on the phone. Go and see for yourself. Feel it. Look at it and feel it.
What is the most common worry, would you say, that parents have when their child enters school for the first time?
Well, the separation, including separation, that's the first one. I don't know if it's the most common, but it is the first one. How is my child going to separate? And we never know. Because when I meet the parents first, even before their children come, or I talk with the parent first before the child comes to school, they say, "Oh, Johnny's used to babysitters and nannies. He's just not going to have a problem at all." And that's the child who falls apart when mommy leaves the first day, the second day, the fifth day, and the eighth day. On the other hand, there's the parent who said, "She's never left my side. I mean, it's just going to be awful. I know she'll be hysterical." Well, hello, that's the child that says, "Bye, mommy, see you later." So we really don't know. But that is the most common worry. Is my child going to separate? The second worry after that, is my child going to be, and I know this is going to seem silly, popular? Is my child going to have friends? Is everybody going to like my child? That's the adult perspective. The child couldn't care less. And parents always want to know, who are my child's friends? Because that's a priority for the parent. And I have to tell just about every parent of a two-year-old, your child's best friend is the one who happens to be next to him at the moment. If he's playing in the sandbox with Johnny, that's his best friend. 2 minutes later, he's going to be playing at the garage with William, and that's his best friend. A two-year-old does parallel play, and whoever's next to them is their best friend for the moment. As they get older, it changes developmentally.
What are the best indicators for a child's preschool success?
That depends on your perspective. It depends on really what you as a parent are looking for. Your values. If your child had a fun day, then that's a successful preschool for your child. There again, the parents who stress academics, if their children have learned how to do letters and numbers, for them, that's a successful school. I think it just really depends on what the values of the parents are. I would think, you know, happiness and contentment and a child feeling good about themselves in that environment, liking other children and liking a teacher and just liking being there.
How would a parent know if a child is not content with preschool?
I think if a child has prolonged separation problems first thing in the morning, if the teacher tells you that your child is having difficulty during the morning, and when you pick your child up at the end of a morning or afternoon or a day, and with all day nursery schools or daycare as they're called now, if a child is unhappy, then they really should not be there. I, as a young parent, made mistakes. I was not informed about preschools. My older two children went to community schools, co-ops, where I was there, and I saw what they were doing. When my third child was ready for school, we moved to a different part of town, so I relied on a neighbor to recommend a nursery school. I met the teacher. She seemed okay. I took my child there the first day. I thought I had prepared him, but he screamed and screamed. And I peeked in through the window and saw my child standing in the middle of the floor, just screaming and crying. But the worst thing was, that is a knife in any parent's heart. What twisted the knife was nobody ever came to comfort him. Nobody came to hold him, to tell him that mommy was coming back. And I was too shy to confront the teacher. This happened for 3 consecutive days. I was so weak. I had no power. So I wound up taking him out after the third day, never confronted the teacher, and never told her why I was pulling him out. Every parent should be empowered. Never be shy. Always talk with the teacher. Always communicate with the teacher. It is so important. So don't make the same mistake that I did as a young parent. And that really changed my life forever, because after that, I was never, ever again shy to talk to a teacher, a pediatrician, a counselor. That little incident really changed my life for the better.
That's a reassuring comment about all mistakes.
Yes.
I think. And I think many, many young parents, Sandy and I included, when we were young parents, have experiences like that that stick. How should parents help foster school friendships?
I think they can ask the teacher of a 3- and 4-year-old, who does my child seem to like? Who are they playing with during the day? And then that parent can ask that child's parent for a play date. But I think the best way is just to ask your own child, would you like to have Johnny come over to play? Or even better, who would you like to come over to play? Who would you choose? And just let the child tell you. I don't think a parent should ever push. Some children, after a whole morning at school, just need alone time, either with mom or just downtime. I don't think play dates should be pushed. And so parents really can't do more than offering a play date. Some children at the beginning may go to school just 2 mornings or 3 mornings a week, and then that off morning when they don't have school is a perfect time for a play date. If they're just going to school in the morning, sometimes afternoons are not good times because many children still nap at 2 and 3. For a 4-year-old, I think it's much more comfortable. They know who they want. They certainly know who they do not want, and they're not as tired in the afternoons.
There's been an issue over the years with birthday parties with young children, and the parents are very tempted. They don't want to leave anybody out, and the kid is having the third birthday or the fourth birthday, and they have 16 children. What would you tell parents about that?
First, I ask the parents what they have in mind, because they asked if they can do parties in school. And certainly, my personal opinion is a two-year-old doesn't need a big extravaganza. My philosophy is less is more, and this is one of the occasions where I really think less is better. Children are much more comfortable with that.
I've read from time to time that having a birthday party or any kind of party for a particular child, focused on that child, puts a kind of pressure on the child. The children are not necessarily comfortable being
Absolutely.
The center of attention.
Oh, my goodness. I see that all the time. It depends on the child, and it depends on the age. And I will ask a child when it's their birthday, you know, do you want us to sing happy birthday to you? And I would say about half of the time a child will say no. Many children like the attention. It's the same thing with toileting, if I may just interject
Sure.
that. When a child comes in to the classroom for the first time with big boy underpants or big girl panties, I will just bend down and whisper, would you like to tell your friends at circle time that you're wearing these today, and would you like us to clap for you? Many, many, many will say no, and then no more is said about it. And I would just say, okay, when you're ready to go to the bathroom, just let me know and I'll be happy to take you. And other children come in and just whip up that skirt in the middle of circle time, and great huzzas are heard throughout the land. Well, it's kind of the same at birthday parties. Some children like the attention and some children feel very, very uncomfortable with it. I think it's nice to ask the child first before making these big productions about anything.
What should parents do if a child refuses to participate in a group activity, like a birthday party or a circle time or anything?
Well, of course, go and speak with the teacher, because it's really the onus is on the teacher, and it's the teacher's responsibility. At the beginning of the school year, many children are reluctant to come to a circle time because they're not used to sitting down and they don't know what's expected. So it is my personal feeling that if a teacher makes circle time exciting enough and fun enough, that every child will attend. Now, if a teacher then tells a parent in December and school started in September that Johnny has never come to a circle time and can't sit, that's a whole different issue, because I think we need to look at why Johnny cannot sit or will not sit for a circle time. We're talking about, you know, developmental issues or potential problems that the teacher and the parent need to talk about.
One of the times that children participate together in most preschools is a snack time of some sort. And we know you have a very cute story about snack time that we've heard.
There are a lot of issues about snack time. The first day of school, when the children come and everybody has their quarter of a cup of milk and their graham cracker, the first thing I do as we're sitting down is I will spill my cup of milk, and all eyes are open wide to see what's going to happen next. And I just very calmly and coolly say, oh, I spilled my milk. I'll just take this towel and clean it up. And as I say in this book, the sigh of relief is audible, because I think they're so afraid that they are going to spill and they don't know what my reaction is going to be, because at home, sometimes parents have very different reactions to spills and maybe are not so pleased with it. So they know the first day that spills are okay and even expected. I think snack time is even more interesting for many children with their first experience in school, because as they're sitting there and everybody has a graham cracker and a piece of cheese, somebody will say, I want a hot dog, or I want yogurt. I mean, they're used to just having their every wish fulfilled at home. And it's like, you know, what? We're all having crackers. We're all eating the same things. It comes as a shock to some children. And if a child does not eat snack, that's okay too, because we know they're not going to starve in the next hour till they get home for lunch. But I think if food is prepared attractively enough and mealtimes at school are relaxed enough, they're all going to try something, even through peer pressure, because there's always the voracious eater who's going to eat everything and make it look really attractive. So snack times are really an important time at school.
It's also a visiting time, isn't
Indeed. It? Indeed. It's a good time for verbalization and news or talking about the weather. It should be relaxed and fun.
You mentioned toilet training a little earlier, and Clearly, from what you said, it's not a requirement to be toilet trained to enter preschool. Is that a requirement at some point along the way?
Some schools do have that as a requirement. Some preschools do, and that is not the first or second or third question to ask as you're looking for preschools, but if your child is nowhere near being toilet trained, yes, you do need to find out, because that may not be the school for your child. Most schools will accept children in diapers, but many schools won't, so you do need to ask that. And then hopefully ascertain whether or not the teacher is very, very relaxed about it, because I feel no child should ever, ever, ever be forced or cajoled. I think when they are ready to be toilet trained, they will. And I don't think the adults around them need to be putting pressure on them.
The trick is, I guess, to find a school that meshes its philosophy with your own.
You know, that is so perfect. And the whole point of writing this preschool primer is to empower parents. And that is part of that. Ask the right questions. Find the right match for your child. If you don't feel comfortable with anything in that school, then that may not be the right school for your child. Philosophy is so important.
What should parents do if a child needs a security object of some sort, of blanket or something else, when he enters school?
Hopefully every teacher will be accepting of that, because I think it is so important for that child who needs that transitional object to hold it. It's a piece of home that they need to be touching and smelling and feeling during that separation process. If it goes on the whole year and it's impeding a child's progress in, say, if the child won't put down their blankie or doggie to do an art project or to hold somebody's hand and ring around the rosy, then if a teacher can't gently handle that by saying, you know, blankie will wait here for you till we finish ring around the rosy, if a child absolutely cannot let go of it, then I think a conference with the parent is in order and see what else is going on. The thumb, however, is a different story, because when the thumb is in the mouth, that cannot be put in the cubby. It cannot wait in the car. So the thumb is a different issue. But it's almost the same thing, because if the thumb in the mouth is impeding the child's progress in talking with their friends or answering a question or singing a song, then I think the parents and the teachers need to get together and see what's happening. I think it's perfectly normal and perfectly okay and wonderful for a child to suck a thumb. It's really okay. And I see it when a child is tired or when a child is bored, but the blankies and the doggies and the thumbs, it's part of being a two-year-old, and it's really okay.
We saw sort of a reverse peer pressure when my youngest was in school. I think he must have been in first grade. A number of his friends had given up sucking their thumb, but he hadn't, and he was a very sort of strong personality. And so when they saw that he hadn't quite given it up, they all went back to it.
Oh, you're kidding.
We had parents.
I thought you were gonna say they teased him.
No, they went back. The parents were not happy.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, well. Well, I have to tell you that I sucked my thumb, but I'm normal. I'm happy. I didn't even need braces, and I think if a child needs it, they need it.
Don't tell my middle son you didn't need braces. He was three. We were taking him to the dentist for the first time. And I said, you know, the dentist probably will ask you about sucking your thumb. He said, should I stop? So I said, well, if you don't need to suck your thumb, then this would be a good time to think about it. He said, well, take away my noing-noing blanket and I won't need to suck my thumb anymore.
That interesting.
And that was pretty much how it happened.
Oh, that's a wonderful story.
Next to being in the classroom ourselves is learning as much as we can about our children's preschool experiences. Doris Herman, parents of little ones are truly in your debt today. Thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
Our gift for caller number 3 on our listener's poll is an autographed copy of Doris Herman's Preschool Primer for Parents. It's a question and answer guide to your child's first school experience. And all the questions, we may say, have come from parents that Doris has encountered over all of her years of teaching. Call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 to answer the following question. What was your biggest worry as your child began preschool?
We'd like to send you Doris Herman's book. For other comments or questions, you can reach Parents Perspective through your local station or by email at parentspur@aol.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.